You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome along to Series 6, Episode 2 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Kieran Burke, it's Gary Riley, and I'm delighted to say we've got a special guest co-host with us this week, and that is Finn Harp superfan Nigel Hegarty. We'll hear from the two lads in a second, but we've got plenty coming up on this week's show. We're going to actually kickstart the show this week by talking about the new League of Ireland highlight show that launched last night, so we'll get the lads' views on that and read out some listeners' comments as well. We're going to look back at every single game that took place over the course of the weekend. Of course, there wasn't as many as we would have liked, a couple of postponements, but we will look back on the games that took place, and we've got a couple of really good interviews to bring you tonight as well. We're going to hear from John Murnock, who's involved with the Save Talca Park campaign, and we're going to hear from Treaty United striker Enda Curran. His ears must be burning. And we were talking about him over the last couple of weeks on the show, and ended off to a great start with Treaty at the weekend. So we're going to speak to the former Galway striker on tonight's show. We'll, of course, look ahead to this weekend's games as well, and we'll have our predictions. And you will hear from John. He's not on the show, unfortunately, but he has sent us through his predictions in form of a voice note. He's just grabbing a flight back from the UK. So safe travels to JB, and we'll get his predictions on the show along with myself, Gary, and Nigel. But Nigel, great to have you along tonight. Obviously, no Finn Harps for yourself, just like Longford Town at the weekend, unfortunately, snowed off. But I want to get your thoughts on the League of Ireland highlight show. We're just chatting off air. You only caught up with it today, so you've had a chance to look back at it. Initial reaction?
Yeah, my initial thoughts is that the league hasn't really started yet because, and I'd say you lads are much in the same boat as well, that you kind of refuse to believe the league has started because the games didn't go ahead at the weekend. But caught up on the League of Ireland show there today. And look, fair play to the lads for putting it out there for a start. You know, it's, you know, since Monday Night Soccer and Soccer Republic left the screens, we've kind of, there's a void there. So it's nice to have it filled again by something. Look, it's not going to be RT production, it's not going to be high budget stuff, you know, but it's great to see the lads having a go at it there, and you know, hopefully it keeps improving as it goes along. You know, it's a nice steady first effort from them, so you know, a little bit of waffling in it, but look, you'll get that as well. But look, it's good to see it back.
Yeah, I'm sure we're guilty of that here ourselves as well. But I think from looking at Twitter today, and we asked for people's reaction, the reaction overwhelmingly was fairly positive. Gary, you're a little bit harder to please. What was your first takings on the League of Ireland show last night?
It was like pretty much got what I expected. I know it's a tight budget show and stuff like that. Couple of bits that you'd like to see improving. Thought there, it was like they were crowded into the corner of a very small pub. They were on top of other last night. You know, Fabio could have been sitting on Alan King's lap for some of it. But, you know, that's just a preference in setup. Not that I know anything about it, but, you know, if you look across pretty much any other type of show like that, there's either a table or a, you know, a big wide space and kind of spread out. They seem to be running out of space and that set up, but other than that, it was a fine production. And as Nigel said, hopefully it can improve as the weeks go on.
Yeah, little tweaks that can be made, as you said. I think maybe the studio wasn't maybe that aesthetically pleasing, perhaps, and I think the microphones as well, just we're kind of used to now the age of seeing everything wireless, so seeing wires hanging out all over the place wasn't great. But look, you don't want to be too critical, because as you said, I think it is a fairly low budget production. They're going to give it their best crack, and it is great, as Nigel said, to have that void filled. So I'm sure this show, when it started 5-6 seasons ago, we had a different format to what we have now. So I'm sure they'll find their feet and find their way and what works best as well. So great to have it up and running. But
hopefully it doesn't take you as long as, hopefully it doesn't take them as long as it took you.
Yeah, certainly. Look, let's try and get through the show quickly. I think a few people thought last night that the League of Ireland highlight show was going to go on for 3 or 4 hours because 25 minutes in and they still hadn't got off the Dundalk game. So we'll try and be as snappy as we can and get through these results from the weekend. And we'll start with the champion Shamrock Rovers, Gary. 3-0 winners against UCD. Goals from Hoare, Mandreou and Burke. But it wasn't just that straightforward either for Shamrock Rovers. UCD had some chances early on.
Yeah, they did, and my man Liam Kerrigan didn't put any of them home. They could have been two up. There was a particularly the second one. Sean Brennan had a great ball in.
That was an unbelievable pass from Brennan.
It was, yeah. Well, you know, he has that ability. I know last season I thought he was a bit anonymous in games, taking the ball on a lot and absolutely doing like just doing stone nothing with it, passing it around, going nowhere. Now he kind of got that out of his system towards the end of last season, and particularly in the playoff, I thought he was very good. But he seemed to have an all right game against Rovers and that ball into Kerrigan, who, well, I certainly would have put my house on him burying it, which is a bit disappointing that he didn't. And another chance as well. He actually won in the second half too. But I think the ones in the first half would have set that game up a bit differently. But, you know, that's what's going to happen. You know, those chances, they probably came a lot easier than UCD were expecting. But it's a different kettle of fish trying to finish them off against a keeper like Alan Manus.
Yeah, I said it to you last night, was there a little bit of a resemblance between UCD and much along for Town season? There was some really good moments, some good chances that didn't take them, and then individual or collective errors at the back. The first goal is a set piece. It comes from a corner. The second, I thought the centre half was just caught on his heels. He was a little bit hesitant going towards the header. It's almost as if he was waiting for the ball to hit his head as opposed to going and heading the ball. And in comes Mandreou with a brilliant goal, a brilliant diving header. Don't take anything away from the finish. But I thought the defender could have been a bit more commanding. And then it's a giveaway at the back then for Burke's third goal. So all three goals really were totally avoidable from a UCD point of view.
Yeah, but, you know, that happens at that level. You know, you mentioned Longford Town. They made some crazy errors in games last season that cost some points. Now, we said last season that would that have made much of a difference to the where they ended up? Probably not. They might have been just that far away, but it wouldn't have really made a bag of difference come the end of the season. I think, you know, as the saying goes, I don't think UCD season is going to be measured by away games in Talas, so not the end of the world for them. The real job would be, you know, if they had lost that game 3-2, even if they were still being steamrolled by Rovers and just Rovers couldn't put another few by them, I don't think that would have been the worst thing in the world either, because they would have just converted some of the chances that they did create. So that's all they were missing.
Look, they've got a nice three easy points coming up next. Isn't that right, Nigel?
Yeah, but look, we won't go into that. As you say, look, Kerrigan has a couple of big chances there. Those are the kind of ones he needs to be taking. Look, if he gets them chances against Finn Harps, he might have a bigger chance of scoring. You know, if you're coming up against a Rovers defence, you're coming up against a Finn Harps defence. You know, there's obviously a difference in the top and the bottom of the table there. But I think, as Gary says, you know, if Kerrigan takes them to big early first half chances, it's a totally different game. UCD had a couple of slips at the back as well. You know, Sam Todd would be very disappointed in his role. You know, an experienced defender like him now at this stage. And, you know, of course, Jack Byrne on his return to the league, two assists. You know, Rovers kind of picking up where they left off, really. They're going to steamroll other teams as well. They probably could have scored more in that game, really. I don't know. You can't really judge anything off UCD for that there. Obviously, they've a couple of cracking young players there in the likes of Colly Whelan as well and Liam Kerrigan. And they'll pick up results along the way. They won't be too disheartened by it. You know, the goal difference early doors is not something they're going to be too happy with, but look, they'll pick themselves up fairly quick and move on to Friday.
Let's move on to your near neighbours, Derry City, to try and be unbiased in your analysis of this one, Nigel. But a cracking game. I was watching this one. I was in work Friday, so I had Shells and Pats on the TV, but I had this one on LOI TV in the background. And every time I looked up, it was one team or the other on the attack. But a really, really good game. 2-2 it ended. Dundalk took the lead through their loan signing from Hibs. That's Stephen Bradley. There's only two Stephen Bradleys now in the league. Thompson then got an equaliser. I thought that was a little bit of a cheap goal for Dundalk to give away. Andy Boyle gets beaten to the pitch of one by McGonagall. He bursts down the wing and he squares it beautifully for Thompson for a tap-in. And then I have to say I was very disappointed with the manner of the second goal for Dundalk. I thought Brian Maher There's obviously going to be lots of eyes on him this season, but he didn't command a six-yard area at all well for Connolly's goal. That put Dundalk ahead, but then McGonagall gets an equaliser, and McGonagall could have won it late on as well. He hit the crossbar on a couple of occasions. So I think I had said on last week's show, I was worried about Dundalk down the sides. I think Derry exploited that, and Dundalk were probably lucky that the likes of Michael Duffy weren't available for this one, or they might have had even more joy down the flanks. But I think overall, you'd have to say Dundalk will probably be fairly happy with this start. Derry, will they feel like they left 2 points behind them?
Possibly. Really, on the balance of play, I think it was a fair result. Dundalk certainly had the better of the first half. Early on, they showed great intent. They kind of shell-shocked Derry a bit. Nobody kind of really expected them to come out and go, you know, full hammer and tongs at Derry. But second half, obviously, Derry had a couple of big chances and, you know, probably a slice of luck that they didn't get the 3 points in the end up. You know, on another note, it was great to see a packed Oriel again for and a big away crowd there. I seen the attendance was given as 3,500, which was a little bit questionable, but what a start for Stephen Bradley there. It was a great goal with him. Sam Bone as well showed some serious early intent. Was it 2-3 big long range efforts from him? Probably unlucky with those. There's a bit of look for both sides. You could probably question a bit of defending for goals. As you say, the Derry equaliser, the 1-1 was, you know, very poor defending from Dundalk. And again, then down the other end for Dundalk's second goal, Brian Maher has to do far, far better there. You know, there's a lad that's playing in Ireland under 21 team, has ambitions to go on to a higher level, a higher standard, and potentially push himself into that contention in 6-7 years as the Ireland senior keeper, but he has to be doing an awful lot better with that. It's bread and butter stuff for a goalkeeper. If you can't catch it, you fist it, and he was getting nowhere near either of them.
Yeah. Gary, we kind of touched on this on the show last week, just in regards to the standard of goalkeeping in the league at the moment. And I kind of pointed out the fact that Rory Higgins had gone for a younger goalkeeper, that maybe that says a little bit about the standard of goalkeeping in the league. There's a lot of players that have come in as well from the UK. Obviously, Dundalk had one down the other end in Shepherd. There's other examples of players coming in. St. Pat's have a goalkeeper on loan from the UK. Now, we saw last season they had great success with bringing in a goalkeeper from the UK. Well, I have to say, you know very well, I was texting you all week saying I very much fancy Derry to win this game. But when I seen the starting 11, when I seen them without Duffy, McElhenney on the bench, which was kind of expected, he's played very little pre-season, but no Matty Smith either, I wasn't as confident. So maybe we'll look back at this and say it wasn't a bad start. Those players can come back and they'll get stronger. But it certainly was a very entertaining game. But just final word on this one, Gary. You said you would have put your house on Liam Kerrigan to score a couple of those chances against Rovers. When McGonagall's in one-on-one, what he done last season, the amount of goals he got up the north, you would have been putting the house, the car, the wife, the whole lot on him scoring that one. But somehow he hit the crossbar. Let's move on. Nigel, Shelburne 0, St. Pat's 3. Not the ideal start to the Damien Duffy era at Shelburne, but this was never a 3-0 game, was it? I mean, both teams made some huge errors in possession at the back early on in this one, but it was Pat's that were just more clinical. And if Dara Burns doesn't score an absolute belter from 25 yards, maybe the game doesn't develop the way it did in the end. It became very open after that. And as I said, Pat's were just more clinical. But Shells and Pats, they both made a lot of errors at the back, and it was probably Shelburne that had the much better of the opening stages, but that Burns goal, it just turned the game on its head.
Yeah, I think Shelburne are very much the architects of their own downfall in this game. It's certainly nothing that they learned in Finn Park, but it was to Dan Hawkins and Mark Coyle, the two lads that gave away the two big errors in possession that cost two goals there. So,
and I wouldn't mind. I thought Coyle was having a really, really good game until he made that mistake as well.
Look, I think anyone that knows me knows how much I rate Mark Coyle. I think he's criminally underrated in this league, and on his days as good as anyone in the centre midfield in the league. I think it was a superb signing. In two roles, he can be a superb holding midfielder when he needs to be, but if you need him to get forward, like he played, you know, two different roles with Harps last year. You know, he can hold in midfield as good as anyone, but he can play in behind a striker as a 10 as well when he needs to. And I think that's something that Damien Duff will use a lot this year as well, because, you know, he has someone in there alongside him that you guys will know very well too, and Ed Irvine, who will do the business in the engine room beside him. You know, that's I think that's two cracking signings for Duff. I don't know where it went wrong for them, really. I watched a lot of this game live the last day, and, you know, I think 3-0 wasn't even flattering for Pats. You know, obviously they were clinical in the finishing, but I think they could have got one or two more as well. You know, Shells are probably unlucky not to score one or two as well. Young Moylan there had a great game in the field for them. But yeah. I think, I don't know, Pats passes are kind of just, they're showing their intent from day one, and they're setting out their stall, really.
Yeah, I agree and I disagree with what you're saying there, that maybe it wasn't a 3-0 game. Definitely Shells should have had a couple of goals themselves, but Shells made an awful lot of mistakes at the back that weren't punished as well, like you said. So it could have ended up 5-4 or 5-3 this game. It was, I thought both teams, Gary, made a lot of mistakes at the back. I know Pats come out 3-0, but when they're playing the likes of Shamrock Rovers and the teams up towards the top, they're going to have to cut out those defensive mistakes. But I think when we were previewing the new season, we said that's exactly what we expected from Pats. Lots of goals, but they might just be that bit leaky at the back. I've seen more articles again this week about Damien Duff than I have about the fact that they're playing Drogheda on Friday night. So I don't think that's going to change at all as the season goes on. There's just going to be massive eyes on it, and we're all just going to have to get used to it.
It's possibly something that could end up being a big distraction for them as well. You know, is it something that's going to take away from Shelburne off the pitch? Yeah, they got their record season ticket sales. Yeah, they'd have packed out 4,150 in the ground. They, you know, on that note, it was nice to see that sort of a crowd in Talca again. It was nice to see an extra open end. But look, that's secondary to what's on the pitch. It's secondary to the league table. You know, when you have players in that team that are looking to battle, looking to slog out results this year, is Damien Duff going to be the distraction for them? Is that going to be what the media is talking about? Is that going to get to the heads of the players? You know, it's all questions that's going to be asked through the season as well. You know, the early on, yeah, they're going to chat about Duff this, Duff that, Duff the other. You know, at the end of the day, it's not about Damien Duff. It's about the players and the pitch, and it's about the league table, and that's the big question.
I know Sean Boyd was out, or he was. I don't think he was on the bench tonight. I think he was injured for Shells.
Suspended.
Oh, okay, there you go. Dan Carr led the line, and he thought he had given them the dream start of the game. He had the ball in the net, but it was ruled out for offside. And I actually thought he showed some positive glimpses throughout the game. But what's your thoughts on their forward line, Nigel? Because we were discussing it last week. We thought maybe that's the area where they look a little bit thin. You can tell us about Boyd and what type of impact he might have. But how do you feel about Shell's front line this season?
Well, look, Dan Carr is a decent sign for them. Look, he's experienced. He's been around in more clubs than Tiger Woods at this stage. He's not going to be a 20-goal season striker, but he'll bag 8-10 goals for them. That could be vital for them. Sean Boyd's another similar player. He's not going to score 20 goals either. He's not going to give you 90 minutes every game either, because he's not that sort of player anymore. He lost a burst of pace for all his injuries. I would worry about them up front.
Were you surprised by that signing?
Not particularly. Look, Sean's a great fella, really, really nice fella. I got to know him at Harps last year. You know, he's you know, as nice a genuine lad as you'll ever meet. But look, when an offer for him came in to go home, you know, he was always going to take it. And it's a decent move for him. It's a decent move for Shelburne as well, because he's a good impact sub, as he proved at Harps last year. You know, he ended up with 8 goals last season from, I think it was only about 8 or 10 starts is all he got all year.
Half of them must have been against Dundalk alone.
Yeah, I think he had 4 against Dundalk. But look, people are chatting about Dan Hawkins being another forward as well for them, but he's not. You know, Dan can play as a forward if you need him to, but he's a winger. Really, the only two strikers they have this year now is, from what I can see anyway, is Boyd and Carr, and that will cause problems for them. You know, but the only thing is they have money behind them if they want to get someone in the summer, so time will tell how that goes.
Brilliant stuff. Just final word on Pats. I thought Mark Doyle had an absolute cracker, and I said on the show last week his signing's probably gone under the radar a little bit given all the headlines about Owen Doyle, but I thought Mark Doyle had a terrific game. But we are going to move on now, and we're going to hear from John Murnoch, who I had on the show last, I think it was last July, when the Save Talca Park campaign was just kind of kicking off. And I have to say, I never thought it was going to build up the momentum it has over the last few weeks and months. And we're going to hear from John now on exactly how they've achieved that. He joins us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on this week's show by John Murnoch from the Save Talca Park campaign. I had John on, I think it was last July, and I have to be honest, when I had John on at the time, I didn't think 8 months on we'd be talking again and see the campaign at the height it is. It really has built up great momentum. So first of all, John, I have to congratulate you and the team at Save Talca Park on that. You've built up great momentum. Maybe you can tell us how that's come about and what the main driving factors have been over the last 8 months since I spoke to you last.
Yeah, look, cheers, Kieran. Thanks for having me on again. It's hard to wrap up what's happened in the last 8 months, really, but it's just been a gradual thing. I think it's just been an accumulation of things that have happened and people who've got behind us that has led to the momentum and in a position where we're in a much better place now than when we started. Although there's still a bit to do. Obviously, there's no guarantees of anything that's gonna happen in the next few weeks, but it's looking that our primary objective of saving the stadium for sporting use is on course, and hopefully that Shelburne will be the anchors in that. So like in terms of how it developed, I mean, we met with councillors, TDs, we met with local clubs, we met people right across politics and sport, local residents. We had very successful stalls in the community. We did, leaflet and flyer drops. After we did a good bit of media, we had a billboard campaign, we had a GoFundMe, which raised, I think, $8,500, and we had a billboard and kind of bus shelter advertising campaign. So it kind of factor all those things in, and we've had some key political figures kind of get, asked questions of Minister Chambers and the Dáil as well. Motions passed by councillors in relation to, separating Talca from the Daily Mount deal and protecting equality of access for the women's team as well. And that motion was passed. So a lot of these things have happened, and I think it's kind of accumulation to the position where Shells have obviously made this offer, realizing that, it's the right thing to do. And it's primarily in terms of Shelburne, it's in their interest, because I think there's a consensus that Shelburne would be in big trouble if they were to leave Talca, and certainly to go to the Daily Mount, which has been obviously the home of Bows since 1901, I think. So I think we know what that might mean for the club in the long term.
Yeah, no, look, again, credit to the group. They've done a great job. I was actually in the Canaries recently and I seen a Save Talca Park sticker on a lamppost out there. So the message has gone far and wide. But look, over the last week, I suppose there's been two big stories in regards to the campaign. There has been the news that Shelburne have tabled an offer, or thinking of tabling an offer to buy Talca Park from the council. And the second story obviously has been this FAI scandal. The former board was involved with this one, with the former CEO of the FAI as well. So we might just start with that one and get your thoughts, because I suppose when it came out first that Shelburne might be moving elsewhere, it would have been sold to the fans as this is the best for Shelburne Football Club. We're doing this for the best reasons for the future of Shelburne Football Club. But then you see it's taken a significant grant and some tickets on the side as well. You'd have to question if the people involved, did they really believe that this was the best for Shelburne Football Club? You must feel a lot of anger, do you?
I don't know what I feel in terms of anger or not. I mean, obviously I knew that, that John Delaney was involved in the deal for Shells to sign up to go into Dalyman Park in the first place, which obviously a lot of Shelburne fans would have had strong views on John Delaney, I think, a long time, and other League of Ireland fans would have a long time before maybe a lot of football fans in the country would have. But I mean, Shells were in a very different position in 2015, 2016. They're in a position of weakness in terms of financially, the state they were in, the debts. This was before any of the new investors came on board, new owners came on board. So, I think they signed up with Dublin City Council, and I think between Dublin City Council and the FAI kind of caught Shelburne with a very weak hand and led to the deal that was done at the time. Obviously, hearing stuff coming out about tickets and stuff, doesn't sound the best, but it just goes to show even more so that the deal that was done wasn't right. And now that Shelburne is in a better position, you know, on and off the pitch compared to 2015, 2016. It's one of the reasons why it's time to completely re-examine that deal that was done, and as Shelburne are kind of looking to do to get out of that deal. So, as how much going on the last few days, that's almost felt like it hasn't felt as significant as it might have had in isolation, the ticket story, because everything else has gone on with the developments around Dublin City Council as well. But yeah, obviously wasn't pleasant reading. Really,
has it almost done your campaign? Has it boosted your campaign slightly? Because as you said, maybe the optics of it don't look the best. Do you think that people maybe are looking now to say, we know what side we're on here?
Yeah, I would be leaning towards it does help our campaign. I'm not sure how much of a factor it is anyway, to be honest. But I think people looking at, you know, what sort of relationships were Shells in with the FAI and, you know, position of weakness they were in, did it lead to these kind of arrangements being in place? And it just goes to show that that Shelburne may have been kind of, their arm was forced somewhat or to a large degree. And I think Shelburne board members have said, even going back to then, that they don't want to go to Dáilimín, but they felt that there was no other option. And I think our campaigning has shown that there is another option. And I think it's given them, obviously, look, money comes into it as well. Let's be realistic, but it's kind of given them a bit of confidence to maybe push to get out of a deal that would be pretty fatal to Shells. I mean, we've done surveying of Shelburne fans and Cleveland season ticket holders, and it's pretty stark, and we're going to release those results pretty soon. But like, you know, there have been many people who wouldn't renew their season ticket if Shelburne were to move or weren't to go to games, and the lost match ticket revenue and just additional revenue from a match day experience of the shop and all that kind of stuff that would go with it would be fatal. And that's why I think we're in the position we're in now, where hopefully Shelburne are getting themselves out of this bind.
As I mentioned, the second big story of the week then was the fact that Shelburne as a club, it looks like they're going to take a real deep look now, trying to buy Tolga Park back from the council. Obviously, you're not counting any chickens yet, but to see that your campaign has brought you to this stage, it must be a very rewarding feeling.
Look, it's definitely, it has to say it's positive. I mean, and it sounds like I'm not meant to be a party pooper, but we do need to see like the detail of what it looks like. And if they can actually do a deal, but the fact that Dublin City Council put out a statement would give confidence that a deal can be done. And the nature of that deal in terms of, if the long-term lease, which would be best for Shelburne, and that local clubs are brought into it as well, which we would like to see as well. So there's a few aspects that need to be worked out in terms of how it will actually look. But overall, the main thing was to keep Tolka Park 100 years of history and heritage, keep that as a football stadium, Shelburne men's and women's playing there, and hopefully have it multi-purpose in the sense that you'd have local clubs using it and hopefully community facilities within there as well, as we advocated for. So, and that's our primary aim. And if that can be achieved over the deliberations between DCC and Shells, and obviously we'd welcome that.
And another big story this week in regards to Shelburne, there's been talk of potential American investment. Now, straight away, other League of Ireland fans have seen this and they've said, look what happened at Dundalk, look what's happened elsewhere. But I think the difference here is it's a minority stake in the club that this American group is reportedly looking to purchase. I think a lot of the people are already involved or have connections with Shelburne as well. So I'm sure you're hoping that if a deal like that can be done, that investment can be used to help save and secure the future of Tolka Park.
Yeah, I'm sure it's Shelburne talking about buying a stake or a leasehold or whatever it might be in Tolka Park is linked to any investment, I suppose. And yeah, of course, like there's a lazy kind of link you can put to what's happened at Dundalk in recent years and what have you. But there's nothing as yet to indicate that it's going to be anything like going down that path. Look, I would, you know, I'm a fan of part fan ownership, and other clubs are fan owned and they're very proud of that. But the reality is in that Shelburne kind of got investment when they were in desperate times. And that has helped us to kind of get back to where we are back in the Premier Division. There's nothing to say that the club is being run as a basket case club with American investors or what have you, or big money men who don't know what they're doing, and interfering in, you know, team selection, that kind of stuff. So at the moment, I welcome the investment. Obviously, you want to see over years the investment that goes in. Does it change how the club is run? Does it change the fan experience? Does it change, you know, they're trying to rip out the core of what Shelburne means, but there's nothing to indicate that as yet. So at the moment, you know, I'd have to cautiously welcome it, to be honest.
One thing I have seen kind of thrown against the group in recent days on social media has been, obviously, at the start, one of the main messages was that Tolka Park is public land and you don't want to see it sold off to a private developer who then might do whatever with it. A lot of people now are saying, well, if this group comes in and gives Shelburne money, they're going to essentially buy this private land. And the message they reckon is a little bit hypocritical. Now, I think there's a huge, huge difference in a private developer looking to buy land and maybe put flats there, for example, as opposed to a football club trying to secure the home ground. But I'll let you respond to such critics.
Yeah, obviously we've seen a bit of that in social media, not too much of it, but there's been some commentary from some people. Look, we're opposed to the sale of the freehold, the land itself, but our expectation, this is more likely to be a conditional leasehold, which Shelburne would have had a leasehold over the stadium before, and it's been leasehold before over the ground from Dublin City Council. So, you know, it's already kind of implied as well in Dublin City Council statement about certain conditions being put in place in relation to it. And of course, the zoning is already in place as Z9 recreational zoning. So a lot would need to happen for that land to be speculated on. And especially if it's a leasehold, I don't see a major concern there anyway. So I think that maybe until we see the nature of what the deal is and what Shelburne actually are buying and what the conditions of it are, it's hard to know. But I would imagine that it would be, as I said, a leasehold arrangement, which would be that the land would still be in public ownership anyway.
And finally, John, we've seen on Friday night, the old lady, Tolka Park, she still retains that little bit of magic when there is a big game, particularly a Dublin derby, packed out for the visit of St. Pat's and Damien Duff adding that little bit of electricity to the air as well. Not the start you would have hoped for, but I think there was plenty of positives to take from that Shelburne performance, probably just not clinical enough on the night.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I actually watched the game back the next day, and actually I was happy enough leaving the ground anyway, even though we lost 3-0 in the Dublin derby. But the fact that it was a full house in Tolka Park, or as full a house as it can be with the current capacity, was brilliant. And, you know, the novelty of that, we haven't had that too much in recent years. But yeah, like, I thought on the field, I thought it was positives. I think we had a lot of chances, and we really did, especially, like, we're probably the better team until Pat's opened scoring. And even after that, we had a good few chances. And look, it is a really young, possibly naive team a little bit. We gave the ball away a couple of times and got badly punished. But again, Pats are like cup champions. They're second place last year, probably second or third this year. Like, Shells fans are pretty realistic, I think, this year. We're in the, you know, a bottom four battle as such. And if we can finish in the top half of that bottom four, if you know what I mean, then we're laughing. I think it's really ourselves, UCD, Finn Harps and Andrada. And we finish, you know, third from bottom, I think we're happy, and we build to next year as well. But big game this Friday. We've got Drogheda away and UCD then on Monday as well. So, like, two real cliche 6-pointers there, I think. So yeah, that's kind of what we're focusing on. We're not looking at the likes of Pats. I don't think getting a few points off Pats, Rovers, Derry would be a bonus, I think. But beat the teams around us, and I think we'll go a long way to kind of stabilising in the division, unlike 2 years ago when we went straight back down. So,
John, brilliant stuff. Again, congratulations to yourself and the group on the great work achieved so far, and we continue to wish you the best of luck.
Thanks, really appreciate that. Thank you.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net, or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Right, let's move on to the First Division games, lads. Just the three of them, and we'll start, Gary, with Bray Wanderers 0, Cork City 6. I think we all had this chalked down as a fairly tight game on the Predictions League last week. How wrong we were. An absolutely disastrous start to the new era at Bray Wanderers, so to speak. It was like watching a team that had had the results that Longford had had for a whole season, you know, and you could almost forgive it then. A little bit like the last game up in Harps, as Nigel will remember, when they put 5 passes. You're kind of expecting that at the end of the season because everyone's beaten down mentally and physically. This is the first game of the season. There's a big crowd turning out. There's all this talk about a new era at Bray Wanderers, and that's the performance they put on. Big, big warning signs early on for me here. Well, I was just going to pick up on that as well. I don't think pre-season there has gone as well as could be either. I think the squad they've built is ridiculously big. I think it's lacking in quality greatly, as we touched on previously. And, you know, there's whispers of a certain player that went there with the intention to sign, had a look around, seen things weren't right, and he's gone elsewhere. So I think already there's some big, big red flags here about Bray this season. Of course, Nigel, we should give Cork their credit. They've gone out and they've scored 6 goals, and some of them were great goals. McGlade's chip is obviously the highlight. But as Gary said, they were really just given an ocean of space to work with, and they duly obliged as well.
Yeah, great credit to Cork. I don't think anyone in the league expected that. First Division, Premier Division, anyone top to bottom of the country. I don't think anyone expected that result. Not least anyone from Bray. But look, you're doing well if you can tell how good or bad any of the goals were from the footage. That Pixelot camera moved as much as the ball did. So look, fair play to them. It's a great start for Cork. It's a great start for Colin Healy. It could be another one of those surprise packages this year. But look, you talk about Bray, the size of the squad they have is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know, it's Pat Devlin completely lost his mind. You kind of look at their squad on paper and say that's a good squad, that could challenge for the league. You know, they've a lot of experience in there that combine the best of Bray and Cabinteely, if you like. And it's I don't know. I remember looking at the result on Friday night and thinking, what in under God happened there? You know, and it won't do anything for Bray going forward with 1,300 people in the ground. Yeah, they'll do well to get them 1,300 back again for the next game after that.
This sounds a bit silly. Is it almost too good of a start for Cork? Going to be a lot of expectation on them now after this.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, Cork fans, to a point, will be realistic enough. They know that they're kind of in the midst of a big rebuild there, both on and off the pitch.
I definitely think there's more expectation about them this season, even prior to this result. Just some of the players they've brought in, and they had a good end to last season. I think there is that expectation that they certainly should challenge for the playoffs at the least this year anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and well, they should. There's no reason they can't. You know, there's, what, 9 teams, and 5 of those have a shout at a playoff. So they are 4 and 1 automatic. But look, if they didn't challenge for it, then there's no real point from day one. You know, there's no reason you should be entering a league to finish bottom. So they've a decent side put together. A couple of decent players brought in, you know, and Dylan McLeod and Rory Keaton and these, they'll score goals in the First Division. So, you know, look, anything can happen for them here. They could go and get beat 6-0 next week. Who knows?
Yeah, worrying start for Bray, though, we'd have to say. Right, let's move on. Another team that had a very worrying start, but I don't think we were probably overly surprised by this scoreline. Athlone 2, Waterford 5. Gary, Wrighton was probably on the wall given the transfer business of these two sides. They're just operating on different levels this season by the looks of things. Yeah, and look, we were talking last week about the potential for big crowds, and that's certainly the way it played out with the games that did go ahead. But I believe that there wasn't an overly massive attendance of this one. I think it's fair to say, Nigel, Athlone, they just haven't caught the public's imagination ahead of this new season, and this result certainly won't help them.
No, look, there's been much publicised issues off the field for Athlone this last decade or so that you'd obviously prefer not to go into. But look, they looked to half turn a corner last year. They looked like they had signed a decent squad and it didn't happen for them. They had fleeting moments, if you like. But this season, they went into the season still announcing players an hour before kickoff. And look, it's a complete mess there. Nobody knew what to expect of them. And, you know, Waterford's given us an indication of where they're at. Now, to be fair to them, they scored 2 goals. Waterford a side that for the second half of last season were one of the form teams in the Premier Division, but Athlone's after putting two behind them there. So, look, it's hard to tell. Again, it's one of those games, like we said, with Shamrock Rovers and UCD, it's one of those games you can't really tell where either side are at just yet from that. Look, but Waterford's, you know, you can't ignore five goals either. If they don't win the league, they're top two, top three at very worst.
I know you're doing a bit of coaching these days. It's very obvious you're one of those that tries to pluck the positives. Fair play to you for trying to get some positives out of that loan there. I'd imagine if your team is 4 or 5 nil down at half time, the team talk is, let's go out and win the second half, lads.
Maybe in such a nice words, yeah.
Let's move on, Gary. And I think, you know, we were saying there at loan's result maybe wasn't overly surprising. Obviously, the scoreline for Cork was surprising, but maybe given the way the preseason went for Bray, we weren't overly surprised either. But this was a surprise. Wexford 1, Treaty 5.
I think it was the second goal for Treaty where Paul Hunt came out and the ball just seemed to go under him. I was looking at it going, how, like, you know, if I had an under 10 goalkeeper doing that, you'd probably give out to him. You know, it was really, really awful stuff. Some of the defending for both teams, I think, was shocking. You know, even maybe a bit harsh on Treaty there, but look, the standard of the game from the highlights alone looked very poor.
Yeah, I had been writing a bit of a preview piece before the start of the new season, and I did just kind of note an air of caution on Wexford because there is so much enthusiasm and optimism, and we've probably been sucked into that a little bit. But I did point out that last season, there was only one team in the entire country that conceded more goals than Wexford. No prizes for guessing that was Longford Town. So I did say that they were going to have to sort that out ahead of the new season if they wanted to achieve the goals that they might have in mind. And this is the worst possible start they could have had. So look, obviously you don't want to read too much into the first game. And I know they were missing a couple of players. Joe Manley was missing. I think he got a knock in pre-season, you say, Gary, and he hasn't been seen since. So he'll be a big addition to the back line when he goes in. But look, you can't pin your hopes to just one or two players. This was collectively an absolutely disastrous performance and result for them. But
well, they do have Lorcan Fitzgerald in defence there still. So look, and that's he's vastly experienced at this level.
Yeah, no, look, collectively this wasn't good enough.
It was just poor right from this from front to back. Like what, you know, a lot of people make a note of the big name signings, if you like, made by Wexford this year, the likes of Denny Corcoran, the likes of didn't Aaron Dobbs sign there as well?
Yeah, yep.
And Connor Barry, these lads are good players, but they're all attacking players, you know, and you'd worry about them at the back. You know, they might score goals, but you know, you need to start from the back.
What I was going to ask you, Nigel, look, you don't want to read too much into the first game, but is this maybe an early indication that Wexford, they might just, you know, as you said, a lot of attacking players that come in there that will maybe have enough and too much quality for the teams that we expect to be around them, maybe the likes of the Athlones, the Coves, the Brays. But when it comes to the teams that are a little bit more further along in their progression, I mean, Treaty were in the playoffs last year. You've got well-backed Waterford, well-backed Cork, well-backed Galway teams that all will have their eye on promotion. Will they just come up a little bit short quality-wise against those teams?
Possibly. As you say, it's early days, so we can't really tell. It could have been just a blip. It could have been weather conditions. It could have been any multitude of issues with them on the night. But look, you can't take away from Treaty either, you know, not to ignore them. No. That's a super start, and Tommy Barr will be delighted with that. They've kind of gone quietly under the radar again for the second season in a row. Everyone's talking about the Waterford signings. Everyone's talking about the Wexford signings, the Bray signings. You know, everyone will talk about Cork putting six past Bray. But Treaty again, they've been very, very hush hush in pre-season, if you like. You know, I know the Harps lads were very impressed by them. They could go under the radar, and it could be another playoff for them again this year if they keep at it.
And Gary, what about our old friend Enda Curran with a brace here? Yeah, was it Alan Keane last night on the highlight show? I'm not sure. It was one of the lads that definitely said Curran definitely has the ability to be a really good League of Ireland player, but sometimes you question his application. No, it was someone, could have been Shane Keegan on the Twitter live space the other night, actually. Enda Curran's going to join us right now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, Grace started a new League of Ireland First Division season for Treaty United. 5-1 winners against Wexford on the opening day of the season. Amanda got a couple of goals there. It's Enda Curran, and he joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Enda, your ears must have been burning. We were questioning last week on the show the signing of Enda Curran, the return of Enda Curran to the First Division after a few years away. Well, you've got off to the perfect start, so I'd imagine that's done the confidence levels the world of good.
Yeah, Kieran, it's nice to be back playing League of Ireland again. Just a break from it for a while, but as I said in a previous podcast with a local paper in Galway, there's something about this league that kind of sucks you back in. And Irish football in general, like, it's been a massive part of my life as a young lad going up watching, say, the brother and the brother-in-law playing with Galway United. But this league, you can never rule yourself out. There'll always someone ring trying to get you back or something along them lines. But yeah, look, it was a good start. Kind of flattered us, to be honest with you. Wexford has, they're a good side, and that scoreline is not an indication of what's to come or anything like that. But they knocked the ball around well. We just dug in, and when we got our chances, we took them.
And the conditions didn't look great on the night either. Was that quite difficult to deal with?
Yeah, when we got down there, we, myself and Mark Ludden, were kind of talking on the way down, and we said this game can't go ahead. Because when we hit, say, we went to Dublin and down rather than going cross country. And it was terrible by the time we, say, hit Tala on the M50. So it was bad, all right, now. But look, we kind of played the conditions well. Times we were kind of asked to go that little bit more direct when we were against the wind rather than trying to play the lovely football, the nice football to play off in the back and break the lines or whatever. But we played the conditions well, and as I said, when we got our chances, we took them.
Obviously, you weren't with Treaty last year, but that seemed to be a big asset last year that they had under Tommy Barrett, that they could mix their game up. They can play a nice attractive passing football, but when needs be, they can go that bit longer. So do you think that's going to be a big bonus again this year for Treaty?
Yeah, well, look, as I said, I think everyone likes to watch attractive football, but at the same time, doesn't always get your results. So, like, I played, as you well know, in a team under Roddy with Athlone, and it wasn't pretty. But at the end of the day, the League of Ireland medal there at home, and look, you can't argue with that. It's a results business at the end of the day.
As you said there, there's something about the League of Ireland that just draws you back in, and it's obviously not the money that has drawn you to Treaty United. So what is it that brought you down there? I think it's fair to say Tommy Barrett himself might have been a big part of the move as well.
Oh, definitely. Look, I think it was kind of common knowledge that I was talking to Treaty last year when they first went back in. Look, they were an unknown entity. You didn't know anything about them. Mark Ludden, who's a good friend of mine, went down, and he was kind of pushing and pushing to get me to go down, and it just didn't seem right. We were in the mix with Merview and every competition locally as well, and Merview done a lot for me, and I'm doing my coaching badges now as well. So I was managing and, well, coaching the under 17 Merview team, and I had a lot kind of going on. So I just said to Tommy, look, I'll think about it. And then Treaty played Galway in Aimee DC Park, and I didn't see Tommy, and he made it his business to come over and ask me about next year. So he rang me over to Christmas, and I said, look, Tommy, I said, I'm willing to give it a go, and didn't really look back since. But he's very good, Tommy. He do, especially say with lad, he understands that lads have to work and play football. And like other clubs that are full-time, we don't have the luxury of that, having to be being able to recover after training or after matches. Like, I go home from Wexford and I was working Saturday morning again, got home at about 2 and I was up again at 7 for work. So it's not easy, but look, when you have a manager like Tommy that's understanding about it as well, it does help.
You mentioned it there as well. You said that Merview has been very good to you. It's a couple of occasions now where you've dipped out of the league for a few years, you've gone back to playing junior level football, and you've come back and you've hit the ground running already this season. I'm sure you're hoping to get plenty more goals. So does that say a lot about that standard of football that maybe people look down on it as well?
Well, definitely. Like, we played in the couple of years I was gone, the Galway Oscar Traynor team got to 2 semi-finals, and the players are there. There is players good enough there to go and play at that higher level. Again, I think if you're in League of Ireland for the money, you're in it for the wrong reason. But for me personally, I just wanted to challenge myself at the best level again. And look, it is a good start. I always set my own kind of personal goals that I don't tell anybody. Nobody gets told, and only me. But look, it's something that I was looking at, and it was in my head for a while to go back playing League of Ireland. And then Tommy kind of really forced the issue, because I only had until the end of January to sign because of the forms I was on with Merview and whatever the rigmarole was. But I'm glad to be back. And look, it's nice when you have crowds in that as well. Like, I'm looking forward to Friday now against Athlone. There, I presume, just from reading Twitter and whatnot, they're expecting a big crowd in Market's Field. So that'll be nice. And hopefully we can get 3 points.
You said you're not going to tell us your targets or your goals for the year. Does a few goals against your former clubs, is that part of the package, I wonder? You said you've got Athlone there, you've got Longford later on in the year as well. You've got a few hosts on this show now that questioned you early on in the season as well. So I'm sure that Longford game in particular is on your eyeing up.
Yeah, I didn't even hear it, but Jason, one of the lads that's involved with Treaty, actually said it to me when we were playing in Killarney. And he said, you'll have to quieten Burko. And I says, look, I'll see what I can do. But especially being from Galway in that as well, you look forward to playing there. Play against, now I don't know if there are a lot of Galway lads in that squad at the minute. I think Stephen Walsh, France Lee and Wilson are the only three. Mm. So look, I don't know what the situation was, but like, you always want to, like, me and Stephen are great friends as well. So I'll be looking forward to playing against him. And then obviously Athlone, I had very good times at Athlone and Longford as well. And I suppose you'll just take the abuse with a pinch of salt when you get there. I'm sure you'll be in full flight anyway.
I might be on commentary, so I might have to just hold myself back. But is that part of it as well? You mentioned the attraction of League of Ireland. Obviously, I've seen on Twitter over the last couple of years, you banging in goals from Merview, and I'm just like, oh, there's Enda Curran scoring from Merview again. Whereas now that you're doing it at League of Ireland level, you have egots like me that are talking about Enda Curran on podcasts, and people are tweeting about you and all the rest. Is that part of it as well, that little bit of buzz, and you know you're going up against a team, and I'd love to silence that fella now behind the goals. Is that part of it, yeah?
Definitely. Like, as I said, when I went back, I didn't know until Tommy actually rang where I was at in relation to the football. And then a friend of mine's father actually said to me, he said, I think you've over 50 League of Ireland goals. And I was shocked by it myself, I won't lie. And I kind of said, geez, that's not bad. It hasn't been a bad career when I look back at it and think of it. You know what I mean? A lot of them were in the first division, but the year we were in the Premier, I think I only finished behind Richie Towle and Christy Fagan. I think I finished on 13 or something. So it's not doubting myself. I never doubted myself at all. I suppose I pick up injuries, and there's no doubt in that. Like, my body, personally, I don't think it was able for full-time football. It was too strenuous on the body. I was picking up knocks here and there. So it kind of suits me to train Tuesday, Thursday now. But as you said, the buzz of going back now, like playing in front of the crowds and all that, and it's great now. Obviously things seem to be easing with the whole COVID situation, so just looking forward to like that now. I'm sure there'll be big crowds in the likes of Waterford, Cork, Galway, Longford. So like, the funny thing is, it's probably the most competitive first division I've seen in a long time, and everyone was talking about last year, but I seen the first game Galway played against Treaty, and Treaty got better week by week. Like, so look, we had a good pre-season this year and we had a good start. So we're just kind of hoping now that we can keep that momentum going. And we have Athlone, and then I think we've Cove away. So it's a lot of travelling in the first division, but I suppose it's part and parcel.
Yeah, as you said, Athlone and Cove, your next two games, you've had a great start. Maybe there are two teams that Cove obviously didn't play at the weekend, but I think there's not a huge amount expected of them this year. Athlone have had a very difficult start and a lot of young and inexperienced players there. On paper, does it look like a good opportunity for Treaty to put down a marker and say we can improve on what we done last year?
Well, I suppose from that's Tommy's side of things. Like, he's the manager, and he's obviously brought myself in. He's brought in a couple other lads as well to strengthen what's there. But we're only going one game at a time. We're just looking at Athlone. And if we can have a good performance, there's no reason why we can't push on and keep the good start going.
Brilliant stuff. Enda, great to see you back in the league. I'm sure we'll be chatting at some stage during the year. So thanks very much for joining us tonight, and best of luck for the weekend. Yeah, great.
Thanks very much, Enda. Thank you.
On Between the Stripes LOA podcast, and we'll keep an eye out from us as the season goes along. Fair play to him. He's a good sport. But we're going to start with his team this week, Gary. Predictions time. And actually, before we hear from any of us on the show. Let's hear from John Breyer. He sent us across a voice message with his predictions for this week.
Okay, this is going to be best I can do because I'm in airport and rushing for flight, so let's have a look. Treaty against Athlone, 3-0. Cove against Wexford, 0-0. Cork against Galway, 2-0 Cork. Waterford against Bray, 2-0 Waterford. Bows against Derry, 2-1 Derry. Sorry, that's Bows against... Is that Drogs? Jeez, I can't even read who that is. That is shocking, Burko. I'll come back for it anyway, because that's clearly Derry against Rovers. I'm going to go 2-1 Derry on that. Drogs v Shells. One all. Pats against Sligo, 2-0 Pats. UCD against Harps, I think that'll be 2-0 Harps. I'm just going to see what that last fixture is because it's completely illegible. One second. So after using Google Translate, apparently it's Bows against Dundalk. You really need to learn how to write, Burko. I'm going to go 1-1. All right, lads, that's best I can do for you. All right, good luck with episode tonight. See you later.
Yeah, great to hear from John Breyer, and hopefully by the time he lands, he'll be listening back to this, and he'll hear our predictions, which we're going to start with now. And we'll start with you, Gary. Treaty against Athlone.
Yeah, I think there's only going to be one result here. It's going to be 3-0 to Treaty, and that's probably been kind to Athlone. Based on the evidence from week one, I don't think anything else is in store except a solid, probably scoreless result for Athlone. So, 3-0 Treaty.
Yeah, and you heard me joking with Enda there during the interview about the potential of facing a few of his former sides this year. Of course, he's got Longford, Athlone and Galway all in the division that he's played for previously. So I'm sure after getting a couple of goals on the opening weekend, when he looks back at the highlights of this Athlone game and he sees how open they were at the back, he'll be licking his lips and ready to get a few more. So I'm going to match you on that one. I'm going to go 3-0 to Treaty. Nigel, what about yourself?
It's hard to know. Is it? Big crowd, big occasion. No, play devil's advocate in this one. Look, the big occasion, big crowd. There's guaranteed to be a big crowd in the Markets Field for this one. And Athlone will go down looking to catch them on the hop. Probably not as big a victory as you're expecting, but still a 2-1 win for Treaty, I would say.
Yeah. Look, a lot of these players at Lone have signed very inexperienced at League of Ireland level. Some of them have come from the Leinster Senior League. They won't have played in front of a crowd like this. I think the Market Fields is going to be absolutely hopping. So I would really, really worry for Athlone going down there. And it's quite a big open pitch as well. So if Treaty get into a flow, then it could be a long, long night at the office for Athlone. Cove obviously didn't get to start their season last week, Gary. They were due to come down to Longford, but the pitch was frozen solid, so that game was off. But unlike Longford, who have a bye this week, and we'll come to the implications of that later on, Cove do get to kickstart their season, and they get a home game now, so it actually hasn't worked out too badly for them. And they're going to be welcoming a Wexford team to St. Coleman's, who had that awful result last time. So can Cove get their season off to a winning start?
I'm not really sure because, you know, we haven't got a look at Cove yet. Obviously, last week, you know, that game in Longford I played, we would have got a really good measure of them because we would have been both at it. But I think it's going to be a difficult one for both teams. I think there's a lot riding on it for Wexford, obviously, because they've played and got hammered already. But there's an opportunity now for Cove to get an early win on the board, one that we probably wouldn't have been expecting because, you know, we're not too impressed with Cove's business, and equally we've been quite impressed with Wexford business, but the game has been played for one of these teams already. So, look, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw here. I think Wexford need to, you know, be more careful at the back, and I think Cove will be buoyed by the early result for Wexford.
As we said, Nigel, this is the sort of game Wexford might be looking at and saying we've got the quality of players here to hurt Cove, but Cove they're going to be going into this game fresh, or you could argue that they might be lacking that little bit of sharpness. But it is a difficult one to call. How do you see it going?
Cove's always a difficult place to go. Tight pitch. It'll be probably not in great condition at this time of year either, as most pitches are. Cove will fancy themselves to get a result after watching Wexford being dismantled last week. It's hard to disagree with the draw on this one, but this could be scoreless. I would say 0-0.
Yeah, I think that's what, if I recall right, I think that's what John went for. I'm going for a 2-1 win for Cove. It'd be great to see them get off to a winning start, because they had a difficult year last year where their season never really got going. So if they could get off to a winning start, it'd be good for the confidence levels down there. And speaking of another Cork team, let's talk about Cork City. It's the John Caulfield derby, Cork City up against Galway. Gary, actually, you sent me across that piece today, fair play, the great piece that Dan McDonald wrote. I actually haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I believe very interesting reading.
It was, yeah. I don't really know what to make of it. I think I need to read it a couple more times, because a lot was said, probably a bit more needs to be said about different things that went on. Certainly, you know, a lot was publicised about the expected attendances and stuff like that. But, you know, I think one point from the article was that COVID kind of moved the story along a bit. You know what I mean? Like, if COVID didn't happen, there'd be definitely a bit more scrutiny of what went on there. But, you know, like, how many times have they had to rebuild the whole thing? You know, they're only going since 1984. Like, they're not going that long. And to be in multiple stages of financial disarray, is really disappointing, even with this fan model that's been going on. And I think there's more to the story still to come based on what Grove Moore do. But yeah, it was a good article, well-written piece. Not that I'd know anything about it, but I definitely enjoyed the article. Fair play to Dan McDonald for writing it.
And on this game itself, how do you see it panning out?
You know, it's a tough one. You know, John Caulfield has been there before, like last season, so you know, it's not like, oh my god, John Caulfield's back. But you know, he's bringing his team of defenders back to down to Cork,
and of course they had the bye last week, Galway, so they're going into this one fresh, or as we said, maybe lacking minutes. It's hard to know what way to look at it, but they're going down to a Cork side full of confidence, no doubt about that.
I'd have concern. Galway going down to Cork?
No, they're going down to a Cork side who are full of confidence.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No. Like, I certainly agree. Like, I think this bye week thing is going to be probably damaging to Galway in this, because they were there sitting watching LOI TV as best they could on the Pixelot camera and going, Jesus, now, you know, it can only be a benefit to a team to win 6-0 while your opponent the next time out is sitting at home. Or there's only so much training or friendlies or whatever that you can do. You can't beat real match fitness, and that's what Galway will be missing here. So there's a lot of pressure on Galway in this opening game, but I think Cork will still come out 2-1 winners.
Yeah, funny enough, that's exactly the result I've got down on paper here. So Nigel, what do you think of this one?
I don't think there's going to be as many goals in it. John Caulfield, being John Caulfield, will go down there with a flat back 10 and just hope not to concede. I don't see
enough of defenders to do the job anyway.
Absolutely. I don't see this being more than at best a 1-1, but I think this could be a 1-0 for Cork.
Yeah, and look, Cork are going to be backed by a massive crowd here. I'm sure Galway will bring a big travelling support as well, given the fact they've had to wait an extra week to start their season. But Cork, I'm sure their fans that were in Bray really, really enjoyed that start to the season, and they'd carry that enthusiasm to the cross on Friday night, and should be a really good atmosphere down there. And I think Cork have every chance of getting off to a winning start, but I think if they can get 4 points from the first two games, they'll be more than happy. So we'll see how that goes. But 2-1 for myself and Gary there, and Nigel going for a 1-0, and you heard John's prediction earlier. Let's move on. Waterford against Bray. Oh God, Gary, this could be ugly if Bray defend anything like they did last week.
Oh, this could be an utter massacre here. Waterford, I think, can only, you know, they've really leaned into, well, I know it's only one game gone, but they've kind of leaned into their favourites tag that everybody's been giving them. But yeah, considering how the non-existent defending that Bray did, like Pat Devlin has an absolutely monumental job in his hands just for this game. Picking, you know, I don't even know how he picked.
I was just going to ask, what does training this week at Bray look like?
What does training look like? You know, even if they'd won 10-0 on Friday, what does training look like? You know, it's like a blitz.
What does it look like up to now?
Yeah, exactly.
Running like little mini blitzes.
But, you know, like 40 lads, 50 lads running around the same lump of cones, like, do you know what
the
I mean?
The team that wins the blitz this week gets to play on Friday.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I don't know how it works. But like, Pat Devlin has a big job on his hands to even decide what fellas are going to go out and try and stop Waterford here. Waterford have been, you know, we mentioned already the players that they've managed to keep over from last season. You know, Patterson got on the score sheet the other night, and I, you know, I've been really impressed with him since he joined the league. But even with, you know, other players that are there, they've signed reasonably well. Ian Morris knows the division, and that's not saying Pat Devlin knows the division. He knows it better than anyone probably, but just considering the playing staff, but even just the particular setups, it's going to be incredibly difficult for Bray to do anything in this game. I'm going to go 3-0 Waterford here. Okay, I don't see Bray scoring. I'd like to see Rob Manley scoring, but I don't think they will. And I think 3-0 is going to be a fair result here. It's going to be a slow turnaround for Bray.
Yeah, I'm sure when Rob signed for Bray, he was thinking, lovely, I'll get a bit of service this season. I didn't see too much of it last year at Longford, but my God, judge what we've seen last week.
I'd say last week was probably the least amount of service he has gotten, including last season with the town. He was definitely more on the ball last season.
Even the highlights, there wasn't a single chance for Bray that I can recall on the highlights package.
To be fair, I don't think he'd get much less service than he got last year, to be honest.
Yeah, certainly not. Like he was spent most of the time doing kickoffs on Friday night, you know what I mean? Like, and walking away from his own goal. 3-0 Bray. Or 3-0 Waterford, excuse me.
What I was going to say on this night, I think energy around the club can play a big part in things during the year as well. You're looking at Waterford, despite the fact they were relegated, there's a good buzz down there going into the new season because they've managed to retain their best players. They've brought in a manager that's a proven track record at this level, and they've brought in a couple of little additions to beef up the squad as well. Whereas at Bray, I know all these players come in, but if you look at comments from Bray fans online, a lot of them were saying, we're not excited by this at all. You're signing a Capitale team that were ninth last year. You're bringing back a manager who, albeit served us brilliantly a number of years ago.
Yeah, he's been not finished sure. for years. He's
yeah,
finished for years.
He's definitely
and the big one as well is how many of them have looked at their jersey and looked at the badge and said, that's not Bray Wanderers.
You know, exactly, but you can...
The identity of the club is...
That's exactly what I'm getting at. There's a good energy about Waterford, particularly now that they've won the first game 5-2, and Bray even before that game. I think there was a lot of questions there, maybe a little bit of suspicion, and that's going to be a lot worse now that they've lost the game 6-0. So I think the energy of these two clubs, that has to be brought into the prediction factor as well. I can see a very one-sided game here. I think Waterford will absolutely hammer them.
Yeah, no, look, I can't disagree with that. I was down in the RSC towards the end of last season when the big, as it was called at the time, the big six-pointer between Finn Harps and Waterford down there, where I think it ended up 4-1 or 4-0, whatever it was at the day. The buzz around the ground that night was incredible. The buzz around the town, you know, you see the people walking out to the grounds, the stands were heaving full. You compare that to, as you say, the bit of the shambles that's going on around Bray at the minute, or Cabinteely, or whatever they want to be called now. It's they're light years apart, and it's showing now on the pitch that Bray were a shambles the other night against Cork. you can't see anything other than a big win here as well. Probably another 4-0 anyway for Waterford.
So we've got Gary going 3-0, Nigel going 4-0. I'm going to go 5-0 to Waterford on that one. Right, let's move on to the Premier Division predictions, lads. We'll start with Bohemians against Dundalk. I give poor old John a bit of a tricky time with my handwriting for this one, but it is Bohs against Dundalk, I can tell you, John. And we'll go to yourself, Nigel. How do you see this one panning out? Obviously, Bohs didn't get to start their season last week.
Yeah, the Bohs are sort of a little bit unknown quantity now, I suppose, to respect. They've lost a lot of very key players out of that squad, and I don't think they've replaced them. Dundalk obviously got off to a decent start against Derry. They'll surprise people with their performance against Derry. I think they could surprise people again. I think there's going to be a 1-0 win for Dundalk here.
Okay, 1-0 from Nigel for the away side. Gary, give us your thoughts on this game. Dundalk looked, as Nigel said, positive start against Derry, but they did look leaky at the back. Is that something Bohs can exploit, or did they not have enough cutting edge up there this season?
I think Bohs are going to certainly struggle. Maybe struggle is a strong word, but not be as potent as they were last season. I know it was only pre-season, but that's all I can really base it on. I thought they were very poor in pre-season against Longford. Couldn't even pass 10 yards. Never mind the conditions, they were just rubbish. And it's kind of all I'm basing it on, but I certainly think it's not going to be an exciting season for them this year. I'm going to go 0-0 actually in this game.
Why don't you think Dundalk can win it? Just the mistakes at the back. Well, you obviously don't think Bohs are going to capitalise if you've gone for a 0-0, but do you not see anything from Dundalk?
I just didn't see enough in them the other night. I wasn't expecting much. I just think that the players that Derry were missing was extra kind to Dundalk. If Derry had a full team out against Dundalk, could have been 5-0 Dundalk or Derry.
I'm not sure I go that harsh, but I have to say I was pleasantly surprised with Dundalk the other evening, particularly given I had seen them the Friday before and they were absolutely horrific against Drogheda. I know you never read too much into pre-season, but it was a big turnaround. So I think Dundalk can take lots of positives from that one, but I don't think they'll have enough to win this one either.
No. But just on the point about Derry, like Dundalk were a loud change. You know, you're missing Matty Smith, McElhenney, and Duffy were not in the Derry team.
Well, McElhenney came on, but he didn't start the game.
Yeah, he didn't start, and you know he's not the most durable of players, so he's probably always half injured. But the point is, like, you totally change how you're set up when you're missing two of probably the most potent attackers in the league for the last few years. I think that result was probably very kind to Dundalk last Friday night. So, I'm not sure, you know, different setups for this team or for this game on Friday. I think it's going to be 0-0.
Funny enough, I think it'll be a draw as well, but I think Dundalk will be entertaining to watch this year simply because they are that little bit leaky at the back. I think particularly early on in the season we'll see that because they're still getting that familiarity with each other, but they definitely have the players up top that can score goals. I'm not necessarily sure who's going to get the goals for Bohs in this one, but I keep pointing out that I do feel there's a bit of weakness about Dundalk down the sides. I know Sam Bowen played right back the other night, and I know, Nigel, you picked out the three long shots he had. But defensively, I mean, if there was ever a right back to get at, then he appeals as one to me. So.
Oh, he wouldn't stop a bus, that lad.
So maybe, I know he didn't impress us in pre-season, Gary, but if Twardek is maybe up to speed, I think if he can have a bit of a run at Bowen, then you get a bit of joy down the sides and maybe a few decent balls into the box for Promise or someone to get a couple of goals. So I'm going to go 2-2 on this one, but I definitely think Dundalk will be an entertaining team to watch this year.
Yeah, certainly. Like, it'll be interesting to see how Bohs set up. I think that's a very interesting point that Twardek is going to be probably shipped. Could he be shipped out to the left-hand side to go at Bowen? Definitely a good idea. You said it already. I hope Twardek is in a bit better shape than he was. He seemed to
he looked a long way off.
Seriously lacking fitness in pre-season.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, just on Dundalk, I think they will play a good style of football because O'Donnell, that seems to be his mantra. So look, it could be a good game to watch that one. Hopefully, it won't be nil-nil. Hopefully, you're wrong there, Gary. Let's move on. This is the game of the weekend, lads. We'll go to you first, Nigel. Derry against Shamrock Rovers, an early tone setter for the title race, perhaps.
No. Look, everyone's bigging up this side that Derry's put together. I might be putting on blue tinted glasses here, but I don't see them challenging for the league.
Do you see them getting close?
No.
Why is that?
I think when you're signing the perennially injured Paddy McElhinney as one of your big names, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think Brian Maher is good enough to be a league title challenging goalkeeper. I just don't see them having what they needed, the big signings. No, Michael Duffy's a good signing of that to walk into any side in the league. Matty Smith's a good signing, but I don't think they've added enough to challenge just yet. Yeah, they'll comfortably top four, easy top four, but they're not going to challenge. Shamrock Rovers is still head and shoulders above them for me, and I think there's going to be another win for Rovers.
What do you make of that, Gary?
Sorry, Nigel, did you say there's going to be another win for Rovers in the league or in this game?
Both.
Oh, Rovers are going to win on Friday, are they?
Yeah.
All right, okay. What score?
2-0.
Ooh.
All right, okay. Yeah, no, I don't see any of that happening. I've already tipped Derry for the league. I think Higgins is just simply a better manager than Stephen Bradley. I think he'll be able to get more out of the players that he does have. I'm going for 2-1 Derry in this game.
Funny enough, just to pick up on a few things Nigel said there about McElhinney and Maher, you could actually pick holes in both of these title contenders, really, couldn't you? Because I'm not sure if you heard us last week having the discussion about Alan Manus. I know he made some great saves on Friday night, but obviously he's a year older. Are we going to see him make a couple of mistakes at key moments this season? And even if he gets injured, is the cover there? I don't think so. And we've picked out, and most people have picked out, obviously Shamrock Rovers, maybe their lack of striking options or a natural goal scorer. And you've picked out some holes in the Derry team there potentially as well. So this is a really interesting game for different reasons on Friday night.
I think, I definitely agree that Alan Manus is definitely probably past the sell-by date at this stage as well, but he's still got the experience to know how to manage a game better than, you know, someone like Brian Maher, who has potential to get to that stage. I would say I seen it at Harps last year when Mark Anthony McGinley got injured. Jared Doherty, still at 40 years of age, stepped in. And while he's not someone that you would have starting in your team anymore, he'd say it himself, he's probably past it at this level, but he can still offer you something. I think Alan Mantis is at that sort of stage now where he's far from his best where he was, but he still has the experience to manage a game much better. And I think the back line that he has in front of him will probably compensate for that.
Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
Were Derry missing Boyce? Or Toll?
No, Toll played.
They were missing someone else.
Perhaps Boyce. I did watch the game back, but I just can't recall. Let me see, can I get a team sheet? But no, Tonal certainly played.
All right, okay. Sorry, forgive me. I can't remember. Well, it must have been Boyce then. But like, that's another key player that was missing. Does anyone know if he'll be back?
Not sure.
He signed a new contract today. Is all I've seen about him.
Looking at the team sheet here, so they're back four. It's definitely not in the right order here because they've Toll in midfield. But no, I don't see Boyce there. So you're right on that one, I think.
No, they've called Toll, McJanet, and Dumigan. They had Dumigan starting ahead of him.
I can't see Rovers going up here winning 2-0. I don't see that at all. Would like to see Derry win this game because of them predicted to win the league in general. But I think this is going to be a very interesting game, and I do actually think it's going to set the set it up as an early, you know, measure for the rest of the season.
And just looking at the Derry bench from the other night, it's certainly not as strong as the Shamrock Rovers bench. I think it was pointed out elsewhere that this is potentially one of the strongest Rovers benches we've ever seen in the league. But if you look at Derry's bench the other night, they've got Oran McLaughlin, Nathan Gartside, who, Gary, you wouldn't be a big fan of, Patrick McElhenney, we've kind of touched on his injury issues. Akintunde, now that's a great player to be able to bring off the bench, and he had a big impact the other night when he came on. You've got Shane McElhenney there, you know all about him, Nigel, Jer Story, Jack Malone, Quivin Porter and Liam Mullen. So there's quite a good few young players still on that bench. It's definitely just not to the depth of the Rovers bench. You look at the Shamrock Rovers bench the other night. Sean Gannon, Barry Carr, Ronan Finn, Aaron Green, Burke, Towell, Poles, the backup goalie, Chris McCann, and a really good young talent in Edo Imaku. I mean, it's a much, much stronger Shamrock Rovers bench, hence why I've tipped them to win the league.
Yeah, well, look, I think that Shamrock Rovers could have a second 11 that would go out and challenge for Europe.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Well, yeah, and so would I to a certain extent, but like, you know, they're the biggest team in the country, so that's going to be the case. But I don't know where I heard it or said it or read it or whatever I did. Still allowed 5 subs.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I'm not sure.
We highlighted it last year.
I was just going to say I wouldn't be a fan of it.
I think they should have scrapped it this year.
Well, that's a travesty. There's no being a fan of it or not being a fan of it. Like Longford Town last year, yeah, bet off the park in most games, fine. But that, what game was it? The one that Scales scored the header in the last minute to beat Longford Town in Talla.
Yeah, it was in.
That brought on Burke, Mandrew, and Ronan Finn, I think.
Yeah.
With 15 minutes to go, along with other players. And I know there's only 3, but that's the 3 I can think of. But they did that in one go and still had other. They brought on other players as well.
That's a good point. I never thought of that, but you'd have to say, given that bench, that's a huge advantage Shamrock Rovers going forward this season.
You're changing half your team.
That's going to be worth points alone.
100%. And I know Rovers fans might take this as an attack. It's nothing to do with Rovers at all. It's just in general, like a smaller team cannot compete with that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be a fan. So do you want to change your prediction for Derry? Do you think Rovers will win the league? I think you're edging that way, are you?
Me?
Yeah, are you faltering already?
No. Okay. Oh, no, Derry going to win the league. Nailed on.
Okay, and you have them down to win this one as well, do you?
2-1.
2-1. I think Rovers will win the league, but I think early on, Derry might be able to send out a bit of a message here. If they can get a couple of those players back, it's going to be a huge crowd at the Brandywell. I think they might just shade this one. I'm going to go 2-1 Derry, but I'm not changing my mind on the league. I still think Shamrock Rovers will come good at the end of it. Nigel, if you want to give us your scoreline for this one.
No, I really did. I think it's 2-0 Rovers.
2-0 Rovers.
Can I just make one point? One thing, I know they brought in Jack Byrne again, but that's probably just adding to the midfield issues that Shamrock Rovers have. You know, how many midfielders is there? And they struggled to break down a lot of teams last season. Unless Stephen Bradley can rectify that, I believe that Derry will be able to blow teams away a lot handier than Rovers will. Because of how difficult Rovers made it for themselves in so many games last season.
I think Rovers will replicate what they done last year. I think they'll just do enough to get through games. I think they'll get a lot of late goals, a lot of goals from substitutes for the reasons we've pointed out. I think Derry, though, will push them closer. But a 24-point gap, I don't see them making that up in one season. Even with the players they brought in. So, look, really interesting discussion on that game, lads. Well done. We'll move on. This is the game I'm going to head to on Friday night. Drogheda against Shelburne. So I get to see A. Durbin and the Duffer and all the big stars will be in action here. How do we see this one going, Gary?
Well, it's going to be the first game for Drogheda, seeing as the first game was called off as well. So I think this is going to be a proper test for Shelburne, and probably a team that they're going to want to be challenging a bit more closely than Pats. You know, Pats are going to be on a different level than what Shelburne are going to be this season. I think I have Shelburne down in 7th and Drogheda's 8th, and I think you know, based on that, I think this is going to be a bigger game for both teams. But particularly with Drogheda not playing the first game, you know, this will be their first game it's going to be a tough one for Drogheda. You know, Duff will have gotten a week to look at his players and the different setups that were probably, like, I think he's going to have to change the setup. As I said, I don't think Coyle and Dervin are going to work at all unless to change the roles, because you could have put them, you know, if you shaved A, you wouldn't have known who was who the other night. Like, so I think it's going to be an interesting one. You know, of course, Aaron O'Driscoll and Ed Irvine were looking into Dara's face for most last season, so good to see him again.
You've got Dylan Grimes here as well. There'll be a good ex-Longford contingent as well.
I think it's going to be a very tight, very, very, very tight game. I think Kevin Doherty and Dara Doyle are going to have to go quite conservative in this game because they're already a week behind, let's say, even though they're not really, but, you know, mentally you might be. So I'm going to go 1-1 for this one.
Yeah, I've gone for a 0-0 draw here. Obviously, I've seen Drogheda in pre-season. They were well organised. I think they looked to play on the counter against Shells. And if Shells make some of the mistakes at the back that they did against Pats, then someone like a Chrissy Lyons you might be expecting to punish here. So Shells definitely need to improve at the back. But likewise, they'll be looking for, again, I think Moylan will have a big role to play in this game. To get him on the ball in the final third in some good positions, maybe he can make something happen. But I can see your point as well on the two midfielders, Rochelle's, Coyle and Dervin is spot on as well. I think both teams will set up here maybe not to lose. They'll both be looking to maybe get some moments on the counter-attack, and perhaps a player like a Moylan or a Dylan Grimes for Drogheda, someone like that, can maybe just provide a bit of magic and win the game. But I think it'll be a 0-0 draw. So interested to get your thoughts, Nigel.
I think Drogheda is at a serious disadvantage for this game, obviously, not having played last week. Shelburne will be over their initial shock of being back in the Premier Division and their big loss. I do think they do need to change up the style of play, the system a bit more. I do think that they need to be looking at pushing the likes of Coyle a bit further forward and letting Dervin do the dirty work in midfield. But at the same time, they might want a bit more reactive play in midfield when they're up against the likes of Gary Deegan and they're pulling strings. We don't know what to expect from Drogheda. I haven't seen any of their preseason. I caught a bit of the highlights of their game against Dundalk. I don't think you can tell too much into that, though.
Again, a player there, you mentioned Deegan. This appeals as a real cancel-out job. You've got the two lads in the middle there for Shells, Dervin and Coyle, and then you've got Digger or Deegan in the middle for Drogheda against his former club as well. So I think they'll just cancel each other out.
And I think Shells are in a losing battle if they go out there and try to attack this Drogheda team who had counter-attacked themselves so well. I actually see this being another loss for Shelburne. I think it's going to be a 1-0 win for Drogheda.
All right, big call there. Of course, if Shells can avoid defeat here, they've got UCD on the Monday. That is probably a better opportunity to get up and running for the season. So I think if Shells can go there and not lose, then it'd be a decent result for them. Let's move on. Pats against Sligo. Interesting one, Nigel, because you've got two teams that will be playing in Europe this season, facing off here early on in the new League of Ireland season. Pats after that flyer. Sligo, one of the teams that didn't get to kickstart their season last week. So Pats at home, you'd have to say they have a big advantage going into this one, given they've got home advantage and the fact they've got a game under their belt where Sligo don't.
Yeah, I can only see this going one way, to be honest. Again, I know it's pre-season and it was on a terrible pitch, but I was down watching Sligo against Harps a few weeks ago and Sligo were awful. They were really, really poor. Very bad in possession. They didn't really seem to know their own roles on the pitch. I think that's a sign as well that Liam Buckley's kind of losing his way. He's able to build a squad there, but I don't think he still has the same tactical noose that he used to have.
How big are the losses they suffered? How big of an impact that's going to have? Johnny Kenny and John Mahon in particular?
Well, look, Johnny Kenny's a huge loss. You know, one of the best young talents in the league. You know, to lose a lad of that quality is a big blow to any side. I don't think they've really replaced him either. Keane coming in from Falkirk in Scottish League One doesn't scream 20 goal season striker to me either. Pats have their embarrassment of riches up front. I think this could be a heavy one for Sligo. I think this could be a 3-0 as well.
Wow. Yeah, look, there's a lot of unknowns about Sligo, as you said there, Nigel. They've brought in a striker from the lower leagues in Scotland. We don't know how he'll take the League of Ireland. They brought in a lot of players recently from abroad as well. So are they panic signings a little bit? I don't know. I haven't seen them, so I don't want to write them off. But they left that very late, some of their business and their players that are unknown to us as League of Ireland fans. So I'm just worried about where the goals are going to come from for Sligo this season. As I said earlier in the show, I don't think Pats will get a lot of clean sheets this season. I think the way they're set up is attack, attack, attack. You score three, we'll score four. But I think this is one of the games where they actually might get away with mistakes at the back. I just don't see a cutting edge in Sligo. I think Pats will win 2-0.
Hard to disagree. Obviously, now Sligo still have a decent back line. They still have probably one of the better young goalkeepers in the league again in Ed McGuinty. But I don't see them pushing for Europe this year, to be honest. Now they're obviously going to play in Europe, but I don't see them being top four come the end of the season. I think they'll struggle.
Unfortunately, I don't see them getting too far in Europe when they do get there in the summer either, unfortunately.
No.
Gary, go on, give us your thoughts on this.
On this game, I think 2 or 3-0 Pats. I'm going to go 2-0. I think Sligo. They could arguably worse in Europe this season than they were last season.
That's going to be difficult to do because last year was a disaster.
Yeah,
to a really below average side like the way they did.
Yeah, it was a travesty, but. Yeah, look, I think, you know, their business that they did last season or in the off season hasn't been good enough to correct to alleviate some of the losses that they've suffered in the off season. So I think it's going to be a long slog, probably Liam Buckley under pressure early enough in the season. I think this game is going to be a comfortable 2-0 win for Pats. There's a far better going forward, and they're probably improving, let's say, at the back. So, 2-0 to Pats here.
Right, we'll move on to our final game, and I actually didn't plan this, but Nigel, we're going to round off with your very own Finn Harps. They're away to UCD on Friday night. How are you feeling ahead of what's going to be Finn Harps' first game of the new season?
Before the season started, I was coming into it saying quietly confident, but missing the first week in UCD of 90 minutes under them against the champions, they know what they're up against in the league this year, whereas Harps are coming in with practically a brand new side. You know, I'm sure, Gary, yourself, you would have seen them down in Longford. You know, we're coming in fits and bursts, you know. So through pre-season, there's been a bit more of an attacking intent by the Harps side, from what I've seen so far. There's a couple of very, very good players brought in. Jose Carrillo, the centre half, is, he's come in from the Slovakian Premier Division, the same team that Chris Twardek played with, you know, and they're this 30th European ranking that the FAI has talked about. That's where the Slovakian league is at the minute. So they're 10 leagues above the League of Ireland. He was a comfortable starter every week in that league. It's a good standard. He was a good team in that league.
How did he find his way to?
I was just going to ask that.
I have no idea. It's funny because
he must owe a lot of money in Slovakia.
It's funny. I would say he's questioned it himself after he's seen all the snow and the rainstorms here this last few weeks.
Maybe he wants to be part of this FAI project to get us up that coefficient ranking.
Hey, look, it's Ollie Horgan, isn't it? You know, the man puts in ridiculous mileage. He puts in ridiculous effort to get these players here, and this season's been no different. You know, we've players from coming in from the Slovakian league. You have players, you know, Filip Mihailovic, the Croatian striker. You have Elian Zay, the French midfielder. You know, these lads are coming in from all over, but they're buying into the project. They're buying into what we're about. And, you know, there's some very, very tidy looking players from what I've seen as well. So
I suppose, as you said, it's just trying to package all of that together.
Yeah, this is it. You know, it's how they buy into it, how they buy into the league and how they settle here is the big one.
Go on, Gary. Go ahead.
What's the project? Because I don't see Like I've been critical about Harps for a couple of seasons. I don't see where the future is, except more of the same. So what's the long term? Not saying that you need a long term thing, but like, you know, how many times has been said, and well, I've certainly said it loads of times in this podcast that you know what you're going to get.
It's the same all the time. It is sort of the tried and tested for this last few years, at least. You know, a lot. You know, it's the repeated round and round and roundabouts. A lot depends on the stadium going forward and that they're, you know, to bring the club forward. But I think the project, you know, in terms of, we'll say, where Ollie Horgan took over, we were mid to lower tier first division side. I think it's six out of the last seasons in the Premier Division now, you know, and established there. I think the next step forward is obviously to establish yourself as a mid-table team. And then, you know, while we're in Finn Park, while we only have the finances we have, you know, you can't be anything more than that semi full-time, part-time role that we're at the minute.
I can only imagine your feelings when you saw the news come out about this under the table deal, shall we say, between the former FAI and the former Shelburne board when you see Finn Harps crying out for.
I can imagine the jaws dropping in the Finn Harps boardroom when they read that story. That, you know, you're pushing hard to get your funding released to build the stadium. You know, we got the 4 million released there at the end of last season. But when you look at that there, the Shelburne's getting 40,000 euro every year handed to them in tickets for games, and you're left wondering when are we going to restart this project? You know, and is it going to restart, and are we going to get backing for it? Look, it's disheartening to say the least, but you know, I don't be in the boardroom, so I don't know what's said in there, but I could imagine, you know, there was some rather disgruntled views of the news that came out this week. But look, the project is just as, you know, you're established as a Premier Division side now, so it's take that next step forward, and I think Ollie's trying to sign his side this season that'll do that.
How will they go on against against UCD? Let's get down to the bone here.
Back to the point. You're coming up against the UCD side that has the likes of Sam Todd that's played with Harps, Michael Gallagher that's played with Harps, Liam Kerrigan's brother played for Harps, Jack Keeney is a Donegal man. These lads will be up for that game. I would settle for a 1-1 draw just to start the season, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough. Gary, give us your thoughts on this one. I think it's a difficult game to call this.
2-1 UCD. I think Kerrigan is going to bang into.
There was plenty of positives in that defeat for UCD. If Kerrigan's in the same vein of form, you'd like to think he put a couple of chances away. We might see a bit more from Whelan as well against, no disrespect to Harps, but obviously not as solid of a defence as Shamrock Rovers can enjoy. So I can see where you're going with that one, all right. I think Harps will go up there, as Nigel said, if they can just get off to a solid start, if they can get a point on the board, I think Ollie be happy with that. So I'm finding this very, very difficult to call, I have to say. And there's a lot of unknowns about Harps, a lot of these foreign players that have come in, we just don't know. So I'm hoping this will be entertaining. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
I can definitely see that. Like, I know Nigel mentioned it there about me seeing Harps in Longford. I was far from impressed. I thought, you know, I don't know what I was expecting. Probably more the same, but unfortunately, that's what I got.
But of course, they found a way to win that game. So if they can do that and find a way to get results in the Premier this season, I think they'll be happy enough.
Yeah, I think, I suppose with respect, we'll come up against better sides than Longford as the season goes on.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Nigel, thanks very much for joining us. It's been great to get your views on Finn Harps and all things League of Ireland. I know you're heading along to the game on Friday as well. So That'll be great to see Harps and all the other teams get their season up and running. Gary, we have to wait another couple of weeks, unfortunately, but I'm sure you're messing around with a bit of a streaming equipment and trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Always trying to improve the thing and improve what we have to offer. So hopefully, well, that's going to a constant piece of work. So looking forward. I was all ready to go on Saturday, of course. But just 2 more weeks now. Put a bit more pressure on myself.
Are you getting out to a game this weekend?
I haven't decided yet. Don't know which one I'll go to yet.
Right.
You could take a chance to watch a Premier Division game this year, maybe.
He likes an old trip to UCD, don't you, Gaz?
Yeah, I do. I live very close to UCD, but I think I might head to Inchicore for this one this weekend.
Watch the liquid football from Harps now on Friday night.
I'm looking for
liquid something else. But
I'm looking forward to seeing this big Croatian striker, I have to say. You'd love to see a player like that just really take off in the league. It's always a great story.
Well, he nearly took off the net in Longford the other day, but Gary might have avoided that one.
I wasn't there, so I can't comment. But look, lads, we could bicker all night about Longford and Harps. We'll wrap it up there. Thanks a million to the listeners. Hopefully you enjoyed this week's show. We'll be back again next week with episode 3 of Series 6. We'll look back on all of this weekend's games. And as ever, we'll have some big name interviews, lots of juicy discussion and much, much more. You can find Between the Stripes on all the social channels. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our website is betweenthestripes.net, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. But once again, from myself, Kieran Burke, from Gary Riley and from Nigel Hegarty, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.